Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 2nd, 2018. Research Park stake sold. Unnamed buyer would become majority owner of 11 buildings. The development of the University of Illinois Research Park, since its creation in 2001, is selling majority ownership of its buildings there to an undisclosed Chicago-based real estate investment firm in order to raise money for the park's expansion. Fox Atkins Development will retain minority ownership in the 11 buildings and continue to handle leasing and property management at the park for at least 5 years. It will also remain the park's developer through at least 2020 and compete for the next 10-year development agreement excuse me, with the University of Illinois in 2020 and compete for the next 10-year development agreement with the university in 2021, developer Peter Fox told the News Gazette on Wednesday. Under the sale, which requires approval from the U of I Research Park Board, the university will retain ownership of the land and the park will continue to be managed by U of I Research Park, LLC, a limited liability company of the U of I Board of Trustees. The purchase will not affect the U of I's Enterprise Works Incubator, the I Hotel and Conference Center, and the Survey Building or other privately owned buildings in the park. Fox wouldn't disclose the sale price, but said it will provide capital for future development of the land between 1st and 4th Streets in St. Mary's Road and Hazelwood Drive, and eventually south to the new Carl Sports Medicine facility at 1st and Windsor Road, which is going to take a substantial amount of money. He also said Fox Atkins Development, founded by Fox and the late Clint Atkins, has invested more than $75 million in the research park over the past 18 years without dispersing any proceeds back to the owners or taking standard development fees. We chose just to reinvest it, for instance, in the hotel or new buildings, Fox said. Clint Atkins' sons, Todd and Spencer Atkins, are Fox's current partners. It's fair to say the Atkins family has been patient for a long, very long time. This was a transaction that we entered into with Clint, and Todd and Spencer have been great partners. I don't think it's unreasonable when somebody's in something 18 years to expect something in return, Fox said. The sale is expected to be finalized by late September or even earlier, once the university completes its due diligence, officials said. Fox Atkins plans to start construction this fall on a 40,000-square-foot building at 1903 South 4th Street, funding it upfront but giving the new buyer an option to purchase that building as well. Fox said a 33,000-square-foot expansion of the Illinois Conference Center is also planned by 2020. We're kind of selling these 11 buildings, but then immediately beginning to reinvest again, Fox said. Fox, buyer a good fit. Officials would not identify the buyer, but Fox said it is a very well-capitalized, large national and international firm with an excellent reputation, said some of its principals, hold degrees from the U of I. It took us a while to find somebody that we also felt would be committed to the university, committed to the concept, he said. Crediting efforts by the University and Research Park Director Laura Frericks. Under its agreement with Fox Atkins, the U of I Research Park holds the first right to purchase any properties in the park, but it declined this time. It will have the same right should the new buyer decide to sell at any point, Fox said. Frericks said the park was created as a public-private partnership so that a commercial developer could build fast and manage corporate relations for construction and property management, and the university wants to continue with that model. We see this as an opportunity to continue to make investments in the research park, she said. The deal has been in the works since November or December, Fox said. Fox Atkins hired an international firm to market the properties to 20 targets and has been talking to a couple of interested buyers since February, he said. Frerich said the U of I president, chief financial officer, chancellor, and leaders of the U of I Research Park board have been kept informed throughout the negotiations. She said the university is happy that Fox Atkins, as a local entity, will retain an ownership interest in the buildings and continue as property manager, leasing agent, and developer. We're optimistic that the investment allows the furtherance of development here in the research park, she said. 2,100 employees at the park. Fox said one of the buyer's conditions was that Fox Atkins remain a significant investor. The exact percentages are still being negotiated, but Fox Atkins' investment will be at least seven figures, he said. Frerich said the university and the research park have worked to ensure a seamless transition for companies that rent space and lab space there. Rent office and lab space there. They were informed of the impending sale on Wednesday. Our hope is that there's little or no impact to any of the companies that are here, Frerich said. The Research Park Board still has to approve the buyer in order for the company to receive a transfer of the ground lease agreements made with Fox Atkins, she said. Ground lease payments, based on appraisals at the time a building is constructed, provide funding for utility infrastructure improvements as the park is developed, Frerich said. The research park includes 2,100 employees and more than 120 companies, including 17 Fortune 500 firms. The research park has reached record employment and occupancy rates as a reflection of the vibrant technology community that includes a mix of corporate innovation centers, startup companies, and university partnerships, Frerich says, which provided Fox Atkins with an attractive selling opportunity. In 2006, Fox Atkins sold two other buildings to a Chicago investor, which later defaulted on its mortgage loan. Fox Atkins has been attempting to buy them back, but we haven't been successful, Fox said. They're not full, and we think we can lease them. We also think we can maintain them better. Research Park board member Rick Stevens declined comment on the sale Wednesday. Here is a sidebar. Here are the Research Park buildings involved in the sale to a Chicago-based investment firm. 1800 South Oak Street Atkins Building, 2001 South Oak Street Chesterbrook Academy, 2100 South Oak Street Ameren Building, 2109 South Oak Street Technical Development and Fabrication Center 2, 2110 South Oak Littlefuse Building, 2111 South Oak TDFC 1, 201 St. Mary's Road, TDFC 4, 1904 South 1st Street Mixed Use Building, 1908 South 1st Street Yahoo Oath Building, 210 Hazelwood Drive, TDFC 3, 2021 South 1st Street John Deere Building. Church spat not in court's purview, judge rules. Case about leadership, membership dismissed. An internal dispute with Jericho Missionary Baptist Church will have to be resolved without the intervention of the courts. Champaign County Judge Jason Baum dismissed a lawsuit filed earlier this year by ousted Deacon Porter Halcrum against the Champaign Church. The Reverend Lekavi Johnson and three current church trustees. In a written ruling this week, Baum said the ecclesiastical abstention doctrine, which arises from constitutional freedom of religious protections, precludes the courts from having jurisdiction over an internal church dispute such as this one. The court has no doubt that people of good faith on both sides of this conflict care deeply about the Jericho Missionary Baptist Church, Baum wrote. But there is also little doubt that the subject matter of this suit is about the polity, internal organization, and ecclesiastical rule of the church. Whether Johnson should be the pastor, whether Halcrum should be considered a member of the church. As a result, this dispute lies outside of the court's jurisdiction. Formerly the chairman of the deacon board that hired Johnson as pastor in 2009, Halcrum was seeking to fire Johnson some 5 years later after he and other former church leaders took another look at Johnson's credentials. Johnson continues to be pastor of the church, but Halcrum was dismissed as a deacon and removed from his post as registered agent of the church. Halcrum's lawsuit set out the details of what became a several years long conflict within the church over leadership, membership, and money issues, and it sought a judgment to clarify who current church members are, the constitution and bylaws of the church, and the authority and employment of Johnson. A motion to dismiss the lawsuit filed on behalf of Johnson and current trustees contended Halcrum is no longer an active church member and lacked standing. We are accustomed in our society to turn to the courts to decide whether two competing positions, Mom wrote, but religious entities hold a special constitutionally protected place in society. In-town zoning to be focus of talk. Working group proposes design rules for multifamily structures. The walk down South Elm Street is shaded by a canopy of trees, allowing sunlight to come through in scores of small patches. Century-old homes sit along each side of the brick-paved street. They boast full front porches, colorful accents, or real bricks. Coming across them is like stepping into another era. But on the street's 500 block, a square of harsh, bright light cuts into the old-time atmosphere. It's home to a newly constructed apartment complex, lacking the landscaping of its neighbors. The modern three-story building at 509 South Elm has the color palette of a black and white film. It occupies most of the lot where, as a Google map check shows, a historic home once stood. That was the turning point, Beatrice Pavia said. After Green Street Realty converted the space into apartments, Pavia and some other fellow in-town neighborhood residents approached the city of Champaign last year, asking for regulation tweaks to keep the area's historic aesthetic and community focus intact. Since then, a working group of residents and city staff has met six times over the past first half of this year. The results of their work will be presented at a meeting set for 6:30 tonight at the Champaign Public Library. Included in the results are proposed changes to regulations in the zoning district known as In-Town, located primarily west of downtown in Champaign's older neighborhoods. It roughly spans from Columbia Street on the north to John Street on the south, Randolph Street on the east to Prospect Avenue on the west, as well as an area running south along Randolph State and Prairie Streets to Avondale Avenue. Among other things, the proposal addresses design standards for multifamily buildings constructed in the future, from roof style, windows, and balconies to perhaps most importantly, building materials, states the report to the Plan Commission authored by Rob Kowalski, Champaign's Assistant Planning and Development Director. The proposal calls for limited exterior materials used to construct new buildings to brick, stone, wood, or fiber cement. That, the report states, would help accomplish one of the top priorities, making new structures not only visually appealing, but also to be built with materials and features that will last and be attractive for many years to come. Todd Satterthwaite, a member of the working group and a former Urbana mayor, said there was good give and take during talks with the city. We feel like they've done a comprehensive job on design standards, he said. I'm generally pretty happy with the design standards that have been proposed. They incorporated a lot of our input. Pavia and Brenda Koenig, another working group member, echoed Satterthwaite's sentiments, saying they said they will still have a few concerns about the proposal, including the amount of lot space that a future development would cover. We're not a lot of boxy apartments that could be from Chicago or any other newly developed area, where a lot of the architecture looks exactly identical, Koenig said. We really want to preserve a distinctive character, not just historic buildings. In that vein, Pavia said, the group isn't against multifamily housing being near single-family homes. Rather, she's against multifamily housing that's not designed to fit in with its architectural surroundings. Kowalski will give tonight's presentation in addition to the working group. He met with some developers and architects on this issue. There's a balance of interests, he said. I'm trying to put input from both sides and craft a solution for both. The City Council will vote September 18th on whether to approve the proposed changes. Soon after, a moratorium on in-town multifamily development will be lifted. It's all about relations. Police, residents, officials talk areas for improvement. A crowd of almost 40 gathered Wednesday night at the Urbana Civic Center to discuss policy community relations throughout the city. Among the audience were Urbana governmental and police officials, educators, and residents. The discussion, arranged by the city, was led by community relations specialist Preston James. One commonly made recommendation during the talk was a request for police officers to engage with the community on a day-to-day basis and become known more as a person than a badge. Bryant Serafin, who will be Urbana's interim police chief after Chief Sylvia Morgan retires this month, said his department follows a community policing model, but he noted that occasionally low staffing levels can keep officers from that work. Alderman Aaron Amon suggested that having a zero-tolerance policy for city and police staffs that don't properly reflect the city's demographic. He also said the Urbana Police Department should start allowing city residents to select each year's Officers of the Year. At the school level, Urbana School Superintendent Don Owen said his district has a unique relationship with its school resource officer. They come to the middle school in plain clothes, not a uniform, and have lunch with the kids, he said. That kind of relationship is very powerful. And amid research showing that punishments like expulsions or suspensions don't improve student behavior, Owen said, the district is working with outside consultants to create a restorative discipline process. He also said mental health professionals have been hired to work with the kids. When it comes to what citizens can do to improve police-community relations, resident Mikhail Lubinsky said there should be more job performance feedback given to the police department. As a member of the city's Civilian Police Review Board, he said he hasn't seen enough people making their thoughts heard. Tree Society uprooting its local headquarters. The organization that certifies arborists is moving its Champaign-based headquarters to Atlanta next year. The International Society of Arboriculture, based since 2008 at 2101 West Park Court off Country Fair Drive, announced this week that it chose Georgia's capital in part because of its more convenient travel options. Atlanta has an easily accessible international airport, said Sonia Garth, the organization's spokeswoman. That assists with travel expenses and things like that for staff and people who are part of the network coming in to do business. The ISA, which has 23,000 members worldwide and has nearly 60 chapters and associate organizations around the world, has been based in the Champaign area for nearly 50 years, where it has about 45 employees. They ended up hiring someone full-time from the Urbana area, Garth said, so they just based the headquarters where they were located. Before moving to West Park Court, the ISA was headquartered on West Anthony Drive, where it had been since the early 1990s. The organization has been growing since then. When Garth started with ISA 14 years ago, it had about 20 employees. It's unclear what's next for the 45 employees based in Champaign. We just received the announcement this week, Garth said. While the organization is looking at transition and relocation packages, we don't know what those will look like, she added. The ISA considered 12 cities for its next home, ultimately choosing Atlanta because it allows for more member services, better travel opportunities, and better alignment with partners. It will be exciting for the organization moving forward to see where it takes us and the growth that it might bring, Garth said. We're looking forward to see where that goes, and we'll know more in the coming months. The organization, founded in 1924, promotes the arboriculture industry as a whole, promotes safety and CES requirements for professionals taking care of trees, Garth said. It also runs the treesaregood.org website to educate the public and tree owners. We have Jim Dye's column, Poverty's Pain Being Felt All Across Illinois. 52 of Illinois' 102 counties face severe poverty issues, according to a study by a Chicago-based research group. New data from Social Impact Research Center at Heartland Alliance shows that poverty has increased from last year when 30 counties were on the poverty watch or poverty warning lists. In East Central Illinois, Vermilion, Macon, and Edgar counties were placed on what Heartland Alliance calls its watch list, the middling ranking between a satisfactory and poverty warning score. Ford, Douglas, DeWitt, Moultrie, Champaign, and McLean counties avoided the watch and warning labels. Ford, Douglas, and DeWitt counties, each a small county with a population of less than 20,000 people, came out on top. Ford was given a 1 on a scale of 8, with 1 being best and 8 worst, on the Alliance's well-being index score, while Douglas and DeWitt each received a 2. Champaign, Moultrie, and McLean counties each received a 3. Heartland Alliance said the study showed that Illinois counties are faring worse on poverty, unemployment, teen birth, and high school graduation rates. The rise in the number of counties on the poverty watch and warning list only confirms what we at Heartland Alliance see every day, that Illinois communities need meaningful investments, economic opportunity, and policies that work to bring equity to all communities. Our hope is that this data can help people working to making change in their communities understand the conditions on the ground and make better decisions about how to move the needle on poverty, it stated. The disappointing results of the Heartland Alliance study confirm widespread perceptions about Illinois' declining status as a state. Even as the national economy improves, Illinois' economy lags behind those of nearby states. As a consequence, there are fewer economic opportunities for state residents who need them most. Further, the state's effective bankrupt status makes it challenging to finance the social services contemplated by Heartland Alliance. Cook County, Illinois' largest and most politically influential county, also was placed on the watch list, earning a score of 4 on the scale. A county received a point if its rate is worse than the state rate and/or if it has worsened since the previous year. For each indicator, a total of 2 points is possible, an overall total of 8 points is possible. Counties that score 4 or 5 points are placed on the watch list, and counties that score 6, 7, or 8 points are placed on the warning list. The organization said 47 counties were placed on the watch list and another 5 on the warning list. Vermilion County, which has a population of more than 81,000 people, scored the worst among East Central Illinois counties. It has a poverty rate of 20.9%, an unemployment rate of 10.4%, and a high school graduation rate of 81%. Births to girls ages 15 to 19 were 67 per thousand. Some of the figures that were provided are not new. The agency cited numbers going back to 2010. Rankings for each county include examinations of poverty, employment, education, housing, health and nutrition, and assets. The study reports that Edgar County, which has a population of nearly 19,000, has a high school graduation rate of nearly 80% and a poverty rate of 14.4%. It is said there were 33.7 births for every 1,000 girls ages 15 to 19. The report said Macon County, with a population of 109,000, has a high school graduation rate of 85% and a poverty rate of 20%. It said there were 30 births for every 1,000 girls between ages 15 and 19. The study said Champaign County, which has a population of 201,000, has an 85.5% high school graduation rate and a poverty rate of 23.4%. Its birth rate was 18 for every 1,000 girls ages 15 to 19. Finally, McLean County's population, 170,000, has a high school graduation rate of 82% and a poverty rate of 15%. Its teen birth rate was nearly 16 out of every 1,000 girls ages 15 to 19. The age of some of the data that was reported will no doubt raise questions about the exact state of the state, but its findings generally coincide with an image of Illinois as a state with vast swaths of its small population geographic areas just making it, combined with urban areas with pockets of both great wealth and deep poverty and social dysfunction. Toy drive delivery. Memphis, meet Monticello. As runners from Champaign County head west to Peoria on Friday to raise money for the St. Jude Hospital in that city, a 9-year-old Monticello girl is heading south to the main hospital with loot she has collected for patients of the world-renowned charitable institution. "We're going to Memphis," Sharon Rodden said of the trip she will make Friday with her daughter, Jonna Rodden, and her mother, Diane Reed. Motivated by one of the hospital's emotional television commercials she saw late last year, Jonna Rodden has been collecting items to help long-term patients pass their time at St. Jude. She comes into the kitchen all cheered up. She says, "I have to do something. They need toys. I need to do a toy drive." Sharon Rodden recalled of the project that began months ago. Because her mother and brother have taken part in fundraisers for the hospital, Jonna is familiar with St. Jude. She also is incredibly empathetic, having gone through 5 surgeries in her 9 short years to correct problems that the twins suffered from positional issues in her mother's womb. Those have included work on her back and hips. "She's been through the ringer," said her proud father, Dale Rodden. Sharon Rodden thought her daughter might forget that tearjerker commercial after a while. Not so. She didn't let it go, and the busy working mother of three. So mom and daughter drew up a flyer, got permission from Jonna's grade school in White Heath, and distributed their request for toys to students there. Employees from Beckett Law offices in Urbana, where Sharon works, and the Champaign County State's Attorney office, where Dale works, also chipped in with both toys and cash. "We have about 10 banker's boxes full of items," said Sharon, who had good intentions of delivering the booty in early June, but travel, baseball, and life got in the way. "Since summer hit, she kept asking me, 'When are we going?'" Sharon said. "Besides $400 in cash, the three generations of determined women will load up coloring books, crayons, markers, Play-Doh, puzzles, earbuds, craft kits, books, action figures, and other goodies donated by about 100 people, and head to the hospital for a 2 p.m. appointment to donate it." Sharon and Dale Rodden know from personal experience that there are many hospitalized children who must spend hours alone. Their daughter did not have to. "Of all the times Jonna was in the hospital, we were blessed with jobs we have where we could take long periods of time from work and focus just on her. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't do that, and these kids are by themselves the majority of the day. A lot of this stuff gives them something to do when they're stuck and can't go out." Official resigns ahead of move. Champaign County Republicans will soon nominate a replacement for County Board Member Brooks Marsh, who is resigning his District 1 seat ahead of a move. Marsh is moving to Piatt County, although he's not sure exactly when. On Wednesday, the Muhammad businessman withdrew as a candidate in the November election. Marsh was chosen by precinct committeemen in April 2017 to serve out the term of John Jay, who retired from the board that February. District 1 includes much of the northwestern quadrant of the county, encompassing Muhammad, Fisher, Seymour, Dewey, and Foosland. Champaign County Republican Party Chairman Mark Ballard said officials will soon choose a replacement for Marsh. Ballard said the hope is that person will finish his term on the board and be a candidate in November. There are currently no other hopefuls vying for the seat. Marsh's move will bring the number of county board vacancies to three after Democrats Robert King and Shana Jo Cruz resigned last month. 5 years for third gun-related conviction. An Urbana man who admitted having a gun at a time when he was forbidden to have has been sentenced to 5 years in prison. Daquan Fenderson, 23, whose last known address was in the 1200 block of South Vine Street, pleaded guilty Wednesday before Judge Roger Weber to unlawful use of weapons by a felon, bringing his total gun-related convictions to three. Assistant State's Attorney of Victoria Dedman said a parole agent was checking on Fenderson at his home, Urbana 26, when he found a loaded gun among his belongings. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, August 2nd, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.